done it. Real three. So here you were, all assembled at Brasenose College for 1 week.
Yes.
Were you getting training for that during that week? Were they giving you advice or kitting you out at all?
No, we were... Not really, I don't think. I know that we were taught how to salute. We put the khaki in. At this stage, we came out of our grey and scarlet and we got into battle dress, trousers and what have you, and boots. And we were really... In that respect, and we were told, you know, that that we would be going across and given a slight idea. Really, I don't think anybody knew what to expect very much. We were not warned an awful lot. We just knew we were going across on the boats, and that's another funny thing. Anyhow, we were there for about a week, I suppose, at Blazers College, and. Finally, the day came, and we were taken down to the New Forest. We spent the night in the New Forest, in tents. The Americans occupied this then, and they were wonderful. They gave us a lovely breakfast of bacon and eggs, which we hadn't had in a very long time. And I remember we had our water bottles with us, and we had all, because there was cheap drink there, we'd all put in some gin or something into our little cans. But I remember waking up in the night, and I thought, God, if we're going to be stranded, that's no good to me at all. I need water. I think we shared it out amongst us what we had. And then filled up our water bottles with water. That was just a silly thing, but you know, it happened. And then next day, we were put into these trucks, and this is a very amusing thing, taken to Southampton. And we got our tin hats in our battle dress and our Red Cross bands on our arms, and there were some women, working women, you'll see with their headscarves and what have you, and they suddenly looked up and they realised the invasion was on, and they said, oh my God, women! They thought we were going into battle, etc. And then not a Salvation Army, a Church Army van came along. It was full of Mars bars, and they opened up this Mars bar truck and they gave us the Mars bars. So funny. I always remember that. They're quite stupid. Silly for things. Yeah. And then we went on the ship. We finally got on the ship. And we were sailing early morning, very early morning. I know I went down and had to breakfast and had a pretty good breakfast, the last decent meal I had for a very long time. Some of them didn't make it there. And then we went across, and then we were taken onto a landing craft. We had to get on these scrambling nets from the ship with our packs on our back. And they threw over our bedding packs. I think our trunks came up very much later with our clothes in. And we finally landed on a beach.
Was that difficult, getting down the nets?
Yes, with army boots, heavy boots, and a pack on our back, and tin hats coming down the scrambling. It's quite a drop down, you know, onto these landing craft. Canadians there took us across eventually. We got to the other side, and the tide was just sort of going in, so we had to sort of jump over to get on. We landed on this beach, and we were there for some time, and then a truck came and took us up to the site of the CCS.
Have you any idea which beach you were on?
Yes, we were on Gold, I'm sure. We were on Gold. I've got a map there, if I could refer to it.
Yes, you were saying you went over with Mary Swan, is that
correct? Well, in actual fact, no, she joined us, she didn't come over with me on that boat, but she joined us about a couple of weeks afterwards. Yes.
Do you remember, would you have arrived fairly soon after D-Day?
Oh, yes.
How many days would it have been?
Well, actually, Mary always said that it was 3 days after, but I think it was about six.
On the 9th?
I think the 6th was D-Day, wasn't it?
That's right.
I think it was later than that. I think it was nearer the 12th. I haven't just got it down here. It's silly, really.
But do you remember when you arrived at Gold? Would it have been daylight?
Evening. It was June, you see, and it was light. It was light, but I remember when we went up the tracks there, this field full of buttercups and daisies, and they got a tent up for us, and the men had picked some buttercups and daisies and put in jam jars on the table to greet them. But we started, we were at Rees, was where we what we call Jerusalem Crossroads. I've forgotten exactly where that's better. Mary knows that better than I do. We call Jerusalem Crossroads. It was at Nonon, of course, we went there, that's up in July. We travelled quite a bit. I've got these names, but you've got all of these down. I think you don't need these again.
Well, it would be good for you to mention them, I think, yes. So the first place you were at was called the Jerusalem Cross, Rees. Yes, how do you spell that?
I think it's Rees. I think it's Rees, yes. And then there was, it was just a branch off that. I don't know what the name of this other place was. We always called it Jerusalem, if possible, of course. But that's where we put up our tents and received our first casualties. And then we went on to Nonon from there, Ome.
So you were now in a casualty clearing station.
Casualty clearing station.
Yes.
And we never stayed more than 10 days in any spot. And there were two of us. There were the 3 CCS and 10 CCS. And we leapfrogged. We'd get our casualties able to be moved. And then we'd go on to the next one. And we did this all the way through.
And your CCS was number?
3.
And you leapfrogged with number 10. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. You were saying, you know, your first casualty is at Rees. So this really would have been your first experience of a casualty clearing station. Do you think you could describe a casualty clearing station?
Yes. There was the... we all had our tents, the nurses, there were 6 of us, I think, and we had 3 to a tent, or 2 to a tent. We had 3 tents for us to live in. There was a large tent where we had the reception tent for the casualties. I was in charge of that. And then we had, I had 2 orderlies, myself and 2 orderlies, in the reception tent. And then there was another tent for surgical operations. And then there were 2 very long tents that would hold about 20 beds for the wounded that had to be nursed there for 10 days before they were fit to evacuate. Yes, down the line, you see.
And how many of you in a team? Would your team have been?
Well, there were just 6 nurses there, 6 nursing sisters at all. And there was but we had 2 sets of surgeons, surgical team. There was an anaesthetist and a surgeon. And there were 3 sets of theirs. But when I started, I worked in the reception place and administered, you see, and got them ready for operating. And then later, when they were so busy, I worked in the operating theatres. And on one occasion, I worked for 56 hours without a break. The one surgeon came on and he did his bit, and we did that. And after 12 hours, he went off. The other surgeon team came on, and little old me was left there. We had to go on. And I do remember, when I went off in the morning, I could smell bacon. The cooks were cooking bacon. I thought, oh, lovely. But I went and flopped on the bed, and I slept for 12 hours. I couldn't possibly take it. That was what fun is. But it was very primitive, you know. All the surgical instruments were sterilized in a fish kettle on a primer stove. We did our best, but I don't think they were the worst for it. They recovered most of them.
How far near the front were you?
Well, at times, I mean, it was very near, in Nijmegen particularly. I always remember when the battle started for crossing the Rhine, the gunfire was so bad that we couldn't speak to each other for at least 24 hours because we just had to sign, by sign only. You couldn't hear another person speaking. That was really bad. I swear that's what, I've lost my hearing completely now. I've got a hearing aid in. But I'm sure it started it, and it's been gradually, you know, getting worse ever since then. But that was a very bad time. But sometimes we were very near. Sometimes we were really very near. And well, when they started, when they first went over there, you see, I remember they tried, they put the first airstrip quite near to where we were. And they tried to, they started shelling it that night. And we all had, I was in bed, I was in my pajamas, I had to get up out of my tent. And we rushed across, and two of the nurses were hurt. One had a sucking wound of chest, and the other one had half a hand on. That was two of our nurses in the early days. Mm. But, well, as I say, we escaped that, but we just went on.
I haven't asked you which army you were with.
Oh, the 30 Corps. 30 Corps. General Horrocks, dear, dear man, he was wonderful. He used to visit us so much, and he was so good to us. He was a wonderful person. And when the person who was in charge of us in the beginning, she was Miss Swinton, Anne Swinton. And when she left, he had her up for dinner at his mess. And after she'd gone, and I took charge, and then he came and he invited me up, and I went up to his mess for dinner. And he'd got the headquarters, they'd done a play, they did French Without Tears, and I sat in the front row of the General Horrocks and watched his play. It was lovely. Well, we had, you know, time. That was at the end of it all, of course. But that was lovely. But there were some very nasty occasions when they did shed us, but, oh, well, we were lucky, I suppose. We didn't come really harm, really. That was the only incident when the people were hit. They were sent home, of course, after that. And then two more people came along and replaced them.
Would it have been unusual to have seen women so near the front?
Well, I think it was, as I told you in the beginning about that little incident and the boys, I think that they were given nearly all to base hospitals a certain distance there. But we were very much front line. And in Nijmegen, you see, we got there on the occasion when they cut off, when the Arnhem show was on, you know. We were supposed to cross the bridge, and we were cut off, we couldn't. We were going into this a convent in Nijmegen, what's the name of it? Marienbosch. And we couldn't get there because we couldn't get across the road, we were cut off. And we watched a certain amount in the distance of shelling going on. And then the road was clear. We managed to get in the next day. And we took over this place. And we had a tremendous number of wounded. We dealt with there. And then, with the road being blocked, we were unable to evacuate. And what happened was that we were so full up, we had to put tents on the tennis court and everywhere around about. And that night, a Richard German came over and started strafing us. And there were people there. There was one chap, I remember so well, we plastered him from here, right round, his whole chest, and his head. That was all was left out with his thumb, and that was it. Took his thumb off. You know, it's little things like that, quite, you know, incidental little things, but one remembers them, they sort of stand out. Mm-hmm. And that night we had to operate on a lot of them all over again. We were just sort of, you know, thinking, retiring for the night, but we had to get up and we were working all night, redoing all the cases that we'd done the day before.
And would that have been clearly marked with a Red Cross?
Oh, yes, they didn't care. Oh, yes, we were very clear. Wherever we were, we had this Red Cross out at night. Every, all the time, there was a Red Cross showing, well marked. But these people didn't care, the odd ones, you know.
That must have been a very desperate occasion, Arnhem,
yes.
Was it?
And then, of course, we suffered a few of the doodlebugs after that. In Nijmegen, they did. Because we didn't, we were not hit at all. But I think there was a little chapel quite near that was hit. But otherwise, we didn't have those things.
Did you have any idea at the time, you know, what had happened at Arnhem?
Well, actually, it was a little later, a week or two later, when you know some of these people, when the Dutch had been, the underground people, they had been wonderful, and they had arranged, of course, our colonel was in the orchestra, and in no right to have done so, but he worked in these underground, and said, if he'd get them across the river, we'd take them in and keep them, and get them evacuated down the line next day. We did all this, we were not supposed to have done that, which is, I don't know if that ought to go in or not, but anyhow, it happened. And we had quite a lot in that night, and I remember we all sort of, you know, rallied round, got hot soup for them, hot drinks, and when they came off the river, and they got away. Yeah.
Yes, that must have been another very exhausting night, as you were saying, having to redo the, yes. Well, was it a very anxious time as well, you know, the fact that you were blocked both times, first of all?
Yes, only for a time, and then you see this sort of moving forward. But it was, I suppose it was really quite exhausting. And then, of course, finally, we went into Belsen. Before all this, Mary Swan was married from Nijmegen. Her fiancé then was a doctor in the RAF, a trained with her at Guy's, and he followed her around until he found her, and they were married in the chapel of the convent. I didn't actually attend the ceremony because I was so busy looking after casualties. I remember quite well, the colonel came along and he said, come on, and he said, aren't you coming? I said, I can't. I was giving a blood transfusion or something at the time. I just couldn't go. And I didn't. But we did have a reception afterwards in which we had sardines and, I can't remember, I should think a lot of schnapps. Sardines and, tinned Spam and what have you, but we had quite an evening of it. And then Mary and her husband were whisked off to a very nice couple that had a house there, and she keeps in touch with them, has done ever since. Yes, that's where she spent a honeymoon night, but she said that there were paratroopers outside on guard all night. Great time. Yes, that was Mary's wedding.
Of course, you'd been through France, hadn't you?
Yes.
And Belgium.
Holland.
Yes.
And then we crossed the Rhine, you see, and that was after we got... We went down to the Ardennes, you see, that Christmas awful winter. Oh, it was brutally cold. The snow was deep. And we had a very rough time down there.
Yes, what was going on there?
Well, that was the Battle of the Bulge. Yes. And we had a tremendous number of casualties from it. I can't remember an awful lot of detail beyond that, but I do remember that there was an American hospital quite near, and I think an officer from there had been come along to the Catholic carrier station, and he said, oh, these women can't sleep in this barn, you see, and they said, they can come up to our place for a couple of nights until you move on again. And we did, we went up to this hospital, and they were very hospitable towards us. Gave us candy and the usual thing, you know, and a decent breakfast. Yes. And
yes, was the living very rough, you know, that battle of the bulge, you know, one hears extreme winter conditions.
Oh, it was dreadful.
Yes.
I can remember the snow in this barn. We were in a barn. And it was pretty grim. But after that, somehow I seem to lose sight of what happened after that. I just don't remember quite so much about it. I remember, of course, the final thing, but because we were in Hanover after that.
Yes. Do you remember crossing the Rhine?
Crossing
the Rhine. Is that in?
Well, I remember, and it, well, we went over in trucks or ambulances, you see. We moved the hill.
Do you remember the place where you crossed? Where it would have been? And how soon after the first crossing you would... With 30 Corps, you would have been...
We were with 30 Corps, yes.
Yes.
I can't remember. I don't know if it's on that paper there. I'm not quite sure. If I don't remember. It was winter, wasn't it? So it must
yes.
have been there. And I remember Charlotte. I remember that. somehow.
Yes, but people could find out because you would have been very far forward with 30 Corps,
yes,
wouldn't you?
Corps,
yes. Yes. Do you remember your entry into Germany and how the impression you gained going into Germany?
Oh, well, the damage, I was horrifying. I mean, all of those places, they were absolutely razed to the ground. It was a horrible sight. Oh, yes, it was very, very, very sad to see all these houses and these homeless people. Yes.
And were you getting many casualties as you went through Germany?
Yes, so we had a... Well, it seemed to sort of keep going right to the bitter end. But, I think it tailed off a bit. I just can't sort of recollect those things very much. But I do remember once the war ended. I know we finished up in, I think it was, it wasn't Hanover. Where did we finish up? We were in a private house. I remember we all had a party. It seems to have been the 11th of March. We really must have been. When was this? I'm afraid this one just at the moment escapes me. Yes, a bit this final part, rather.
But tell me about Belsen, because I think you were saying earlier...
Actually, I mean, Belsen, most of the people had been taken out. What happened was we had a certain number, not sure where we were, quite near to Belsen, and we'd taken over a school, and we had a lot of the people out of Belsen in those blue and white stripes. And it was pathetic. They were all sorts like skeletons, and a lot of them had TB, and you know... And they were so undernourished. We had them for just a day or two because they had to be taken away where they could be properly cared for because we were only a big small unit, so we couldn't do very much for them. But it was pathetic. But I did go over with Anne Swinton to see, I think Mary had left at that time, and I did go over to Interbelsen to see the place and what had happened right about there. It was great. For this awful gesture. I think it's the most terrible thing to have ever happened. I mean, I know it's happened, I think it's just spared the atrocities in Japan and what have you, but to have been sort of there and knowing they were going on round about you, it was really frightful.
Was it a very big place? Could you describe Belsen?
Well, it was in woodland, you see. It was in woodland. And so it was hidden away, like the rest of them, they were all hidden away, weren't they? I mean, the people living in the villages round about didn't believe it. They didn't know it was happening.
And what parts did you go into?
Oh, we didn't see very much of it. No, I didn't see very much, just the skeleton of the whole place, you know, and there were pits and so forth dug all round about. But I didn't see an awful lot. It was just a fleeting visit. That was all. But it was happening, as I said, all the time. As I said, we knew nothing about it until our officers went in and saw what was going on. They came back and described it to us. Yes. A bit horrifying.
Well, was there much shock, do you think, at what was seen? Were people really shocked?
So. Mm. Yes. But you see, I mean, these people, they've been killed. I mean, they're the survivors. They were just the skeletons, and so they couldn't all have survived. But what I was told, I mean, you've read it all in the papers, you've seen it all, but I think from what I was told, I mean, the poor things, they were sort of, if they got a scrap of bread, they'd bury it in the ground, and they can give it back to it later. It was all quite dreadful. Dreadful things happened there. Mm-hmm.
Did you come across the German civilians at all as you went through Germany? You know,
not
apart
many.
From seeing the
not
refugees?
Many, not many, no. The Dutch, yes, and the Belgians, yes, but we didn't meet many civilian Germans.
Yes. How did the Dutch and Belgians compare?
Well, they were awfully kind to us. They were very nice indeed. We enjoyed them being, you know, round about. We met quite a few of them. And they all seemed to be, we didn't meet any of the... pro Nazi. So I think they're all so pleased to see us. That when we went through a village or anywhere, they'd come out with their flowers and greet us, you know. And they'd greet us and welcome us and really say they were so happy to see us. But of course, we were only a small unit. It was when the big tanks went through. That's when they were fated by everybody and they made a lot of fuss. And we were such a small unit that we didn't. I mean, they came, they brought us flowers and were very kind to us. And offered us anything there. Yeah.
What did you think of being in a small unit like that? You know, how did it compare with your other war work? Did you prefer it, or would you rather have been in us?
Well, I thought that the, normally, it was hard work, and we had very little leisure time, but it was much more satisfying. You felt you were really in the battle, you know, and doing something worthwhile. As far as all my war experience, I think that was the most satisfying, really.
If I could just go back to the sort of system of a casualty clearing station, you've explained very well, you know, the hospital and the sort of setup of the tents. What was the system when the wounded started to arrive? Do you remember that?
Yes. We had a reception area. When we were tented, they'd come all be brought into the one tent, and then they would be assessed by the surgeon as to how bad they were, you see, and those that needed immediate resuscitation. And they were kept there, that's when we resuscitated them. And then the surgeon would decide when they were fit to operate on. You should get penetrating wounds of lungs and abdomens and what have you. And then they would go through one at a time. In the meantime, we had to keep them in this reception area until they were fit to be moved to a ward.
Did many die?
Well, we always had some die, you know. Not quite a few. We had our own little cemetery in Nijmegen. We had our own little cemetery, the one that's mentioned there. But, of course, eventually they were all taken and buried in the proper cemeteries and various places. But there were quite a number that died.
Yes, so the teams in the casualty clearing station, about how many doctors did you have?
Well, there was one who was responsible entirely for blood transfusions. And then we had there were surgeons. It depended how busy you see. If there was a battle going on and they were not so busy behind, they would move up a casualty team, a surgical team of a surgeon, an anaesthetist, sometimes an assistant, but they would be moved forward and come to us. If we got the bulk of the casualties, they would come to us. And then sometimes we were left with just one set of operating surgeon duty. And so they just came in when we really needed them. They'd be moved up from a field ambulance or something like that if they were not busy and that particular area was not affected at the time. They'd come to us, you see. Mm.
And orderlies, how did you get on with the orderlies?
On the hill, they were very good indeed, very cooperative. They resented us there very much at the time when we first went there because they had rather had it all their own way in the desert. And I don't think we were very well received, but they got to know us gradually. And when they put out the cup of mugs of tea in the morning, they would include us. And then, as I say, I felt I was finally accepted on one occasion when there was one poor lad who was desperately ill. He was actually unconscious and in a filthy condition, absolutely filthy condition. And we left him until last because we knew that there was no help for him. And at the end of the day, I got a bucket of water and the boys said, oh, we'll do this, we'll wash him. And I said, no, I'd like to do it myself. He had, incidentally, come from a village in Suffolk. And I didn't actually know his parents, but I felt I ought to. And I did, and I said I would wash him myself. And that was when one of the orderlies said to me, now I know you're one of us. And that, I thought, was a wonderful, wonderful compliment. It was the nicest thing that's ever been said to me. Silly, isn't it? Silly little thing, but it was one of those.
Do you think there was any sort of motive, apart from the, obviously, you know, your skills for the QA nurses, your contribution in a medical sense, but was there any other motive of General Horrocks in having women so close to the front?
Oh, well, actually, I think it was, I think it was, they thought it was good for morale, I think, for the troops. I think that was the thing. But it was really our colonel in charge of our Catholic clearing station, Colonel Gordon. And he had been in the First World War. He was an elderly man, but a most brilliant man, and a wonderful man, a very humane man. And he liked to have the nurses there. He said that he thought that to have women there would be awfully good for morale. And he was the one, you know, really, he was told on one occasion we wanted to go forward, I do remember, but he, we went. He knew us all, and he treated us all as his own children, really.